Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's April 4th, 4/4/2017. Our show tonight, we've got Going Up on a Tuesday, Got Your Whiskeys to Tuesday. All right, good line, Hillary, thank you. I'm Jimmy Carboni, all right, woo! Going Up on a Tuesday, Got Your Whiskeys to Tuesday, I like that. Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal in New York City. We've got an interesting show here today on at Heritage Radio Network. Lou Bryson, this whole show is built around you. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Very good to be here. Always good to be here.
For listeners out there, if every once in a while I ask a question, I say, do you know an American living beer and whiskey writer? And everyone kind of pauses on that. But yeah, that's you. You're Lou Bryson.
You know what they say, dead or Canadian. That's the...
But you got
neither.
You're the editor of Whiskey Advocate.
I was.
Philly Beer Writer, Philly Beer Week. And you have books out now. What's the book?
Tasting Whiskey, about 2 years old. But, you know, I was just out in Minneapolis for the Whiskey on Ice Festival. And obviously there's an untapped market. People were lining up for it. It was great.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about whiskeys and beers today. And we've got a buddy in from England. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate being here.
His name is?
Paul Jones. I'm from Cloudwater Brewing in Manchester, England.
All right. And you're here with our friend B.R. Royer from Shelton Brothers.
That's right.
All right. And some more folk from the world of whiskey and spirits.
How you doing? I'm Harold Simino from Norman's Kill. We specialize in whiskey and grilled cheese sandwiches.
Great bar in Williamsburg. Yeah, nice. Man.
Hi, everyone. This is Gabby. I'm from Kings County Distillery.
Great. And, you know, Lou, tonight, part of the thing, we're going to Jimmy's Number 43. We're going to be tasting pulled pork biscuits. But
Sorry, I'm just a little breathless from tasting some of your beer. That's you like damn it. Nice. Yeah, what is that?
Well, we're trying to play catch up, man. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of
well, stop running so damn hard. That's wow.
But five or six bourbons from New York, including what we have, two from Kings County. Mm-hmm. We have a Van Brunt.
We have Finger Lakes.
And we have Hudson.
Hudson, baby bourbon, yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be a good night. But it was great getting you up here. Would you have an issue with the trains and the Jersey Transit?
Yeah, the Jersey Transit thing, but it wasn't that bad. Got me in a little, got here before you did, didn't I?
You took the subway.
I did.
And we got Paul Jones. So what, you like his beard, Luke?
Yeah, this is nice. It's very nice.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, we're really trying to close the gap between every experience that we have that, you know, is top notch and that wonderful old school world of traditional British brewing. So, I mean, we're unashamedly a modern brewery. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you're satisfied with your first drop there.
Yeah, it kind of took me back.
Cool. Yeah, no, I noticed that, and that's very pleasing to see.
Lou, that's pretty obvious, was it?
Lou, what's your favorite style of beer right now?
Wow, you know, I still have to say my favorite style is you know, a variety of lagers, because it's just, I mean, I was saying earlier, my idea of a perfect day is like an afternoon spent drinking Helles at the Augustiner Keller in Munich.
Word. Nice.
Yeah, right? Yep. Yeah.
Cool. What about the other style?
Oh, sorry.
The new trendy style.
Oh, the new trendy style, the New England IPA, the orange juice box beer.
The hazies.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, now I know why Hetty Topper says drink it from the can, because they don't want you to look at it. But on the other hand, I mean, I live down there where Tired Hands is, and I go over, I drink their beer, I eat their bread, which they also bake there, which is awesome. But good beers, you know, they just don't, you know, you got to drink them within 2 weeks or so.
So then, Paul, you're here in the States.
Yeah. You know, are you influenced by that style? Didn't
I think we're to Boston. Yeah, I think you know, we really specialize in that juicy, low bitterness IPA in the UK. It's one of the things that I think we're best known for. So you know, we're not the first to make that style, but I'd say that largely we really pledged our allegiance to that that way of delivering hop flavor. And the really cool thing from my point of view, and I hear what you're saying about, you know, it can look a bit odd, but I can put one of our double IPAs or even one of our IPAs in front of someone that's not a beer drinker as much as I can, that's a hardened beer geek, and they're both going to more than likely enjoy the beer. And we have that experience all the time in our tap room where someone that's like, I don't really like beer. And I'm like, well, probably you don't like bitterness. And so try this. It's fruity. It's juicy. And they drink it and they're like, it's amazing. And sure, it's 9%. It's our double IPA. It's one of the styles that we're most known for. And that's really surprising for people because they didn't expect something that's hoppy all that strong to be a vessel for those flavors.
I mean, you're really out of the norm with a 9%er, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, in terms of our brewing heritage, you know, brewing heritage in the UK is somewhere between, you know, 3.5% and 5% is where almost all traditional British beers are that are sessionable. So yeah, we're far from that, but we're also far from that in terms of flavor impact. I mean, sure. You know, if we want you to drink 10 beers in a row, for sure, we need that ABV to be lower, and we need the flavor impact to be lower so that your palate's ready.
I could drink 10 of these in a row. So, Harold, at Norman Kills, I know you have like 400 whiskeys.
Yep.
You know, do you have any beers on tap?
Yeah, we have 12 drafts, and for the most part, they rotate. We have about 6 steady and 6 lines rotate, usually with styles. So we'll you know, tap a Pilsner behind a Pilsner, tap an IPA behind an IPA.
Yeah, and then beers here from your importer, Shelton Brothers. Tell us a little bit about how you guys met Cloudwater and what you're doing with them in the States.
Initially it was Kevin, who's our UK manager, was over in Manchester at the Indie Man beer convention with Dan, and tried the beers and loved them and thought that this was something, you know, sort of the new wave of British brewers. And we've got our very traditional Bluebird Bitter from Coniston. We've got Timothy Taylor.
I love that beer. The Bluebird. So, I have been a fan of that for years.
But, you know, there is so much more going on. We're working with a lot of London-based breweries. But, yeah, we love the stuff that Cloudwater is doing. Right now we're just bringing over kegs, some of the IPAs, but also some of the bigger beers as they're more suitable for transport. And you can try some of these next Friday the 14th at Tirst.
That's great. Did you guys, have you seen a big change in British beer since you first started, Lou?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, when I first started, it was really old school and nothing else. And now, you know, you've got a full range of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's been phenomenal how quickly the scene's changed. You go back, I think, probably about 8 years, and really it's mostly traditional and ever so slightly less traditional.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, do you remember Hopback Lightning?
Yeah,
you remember that, sure.
Vaguely,
and that was, I mean, that was way out of the norm, and now that's, you know, I mean, it's completely in the norm now. You know, it would be something that would not even be thought of as crazy.
Right, that was something that, yeah, it was all of a sudden, yeah, super hoppy, well, for...
Right,
for
exactly.
Rich, and yeah.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that's, you know, this is the exciting point that we're at right now is, you know, to get this experience that you're shocked to find a British brewed IPA that's as impactful as the one that you just tried. That's really exciting for us. And it's something that, you know, we're talking to Shelton Brothers all the time about how we change the perception of British beer. It's not just that we have this wonderful heritage. I mean, that is really cool. And we love that. And we only get to do what we do today because of that. But there's another side of it, too. You know, hopefully we get the chance to show that off as much as we can in the coming years.
Is anyone making a decent lager?
yeah, we're making some really good lager.
Yeah.
Thornbridge are making the best Helles right now in the UK. A good friend of mine, Alex Troncoso, down at Lost and Grounded in Bristol, he's making a phenomenal Keller Pils.
Nice.
Four Pure down in London, they're making a good craft lager. So a little bit of a modern twist. There's some really good lager happening.
Okay.
And that's something that's picking up a lot of pace.
I have to say, you know, you said you saw my face, which
sure.
Unfortunately, I can't really do an impression of. I just kind of, when I had that first sip of your beer, to be honest, I think I'd probably have the same face if I tasted a really proper bitter from an American brewery.
Sure, yeah, and I can appreciate that. Well, but you can do that. You can go to somewhere like Smokestack Magnolia in San Francisco and drink some like absolutely on point British beer.
True.
And you can pick it up left, right, and center. I mean, Shelton Brothers do a great job of bringing over a lot of traditional brands. So yeah, I mean, like the my quest at least in these coming years is what can we do to showcase what else is going on in British beer?
Sure.
Yeah.
But are you kind of new to this, Paul Jones?
We're 2 years old.
Have you been brewing for a while? You know, how'd you get into this business?
My co-founding partner's been brewing for nearly 20 years. So we took that depth and breadth of experience that he had. I mean, he came previously from a brewery that I think it's fair to say had 1 foot in traditional beer and 1 foot in modern beer. So they did a really great mix of both, and they still do. They're a great brewery called Marble Brewery from Manchester. So he came to he finished his work there, came to talk with me about a new project, and we really just decided to go all guns blazing on modern beer. And so taking his depth and sort of length of experience and bringing through as many kind of modern insights as we could possibly bring to the project, puts us in the position that we're in today.
Cool, man. Cheers to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheers, dude.
What's the secret to the hazy New England IPA?
Tastes good.
Yeah, that's the big secret, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, so it's interesting. So go back to your point before, Lou, about, drinking from the can. I don't think that's true anymore.
No,
I mean, you can.
It's not.
I mean, you know, we pour beer now in the UK where people are excited. Oh my god, I can't see through it. It's amazing.
Ah!
I mean, you can't imagine that happening some years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not
in proper condition.
Yeah. So
yeah, right?
It's a funny thing, and I think especially in the UK where we have. Where we have this focus on real ale still, where you know bright beer is right,
yeah.
and non bright beer is wrong. You've got to forget about a bunch of continental stars when I say that, of course. But we'll forget that. We'll forget that for this point in time.
Love this guy, Paul Jones, John Paul Jones.
Here we go.
Now we can rags on you. Okay, so just before over at the bar at Roberta's Pizza. Which actually had a couple nice Detroit whiskeys up on the bar.
Yes.
What were those?
What was it? Johnny Smoking... I can't remember the name of it now.
Johnny Smoking Gun?
Johnny Smoking Gun, right. Which actually has an addition of tea to it. I think Lapsang Souchong tea in it.
Oh, that's a great tea.
To pick up like a smoky flavor.
But Roberta's is like the crossroads here of like all things. And there's always some brewers.
Some nice looking wines too.
Wines
right?
too.
Yeah.
But the guys from Arizona Wilderness were here and apparently they know you.
Well, yeah, we've definitely met a couple of times before, that's for sure.
And John says, I'm supposed to say that your experience was, it's the first time for everything, the first time in New York, first time in pizza, first time in radio, and the first time brewing.
Those guys are amazing.
That's your message. Yeah. And for you guys, you know, Norman and Gabby, you know, you guys are tight in the scene in New York City, you know, whiskey and... tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to. You know, you got Norman Kills, 400 Whiskeys. You're hanging out before with Lou. What are you guys talking about?
Who was paying for the round?
I think
was most of the...
We both ordered a beer, and then he got up and left. So the bartender was like, you guys together? So.
Strictly coincidence.
He's a pro. You got to watch out for him.
So I said, I guess so. So I paid for it. But he bought the second round, so it's all good.
But you opened up a place in New York. It's like, to me, it's like Whiskey Temple. It's also a cool place. The design's nice.
Yeah, it's casual. It's a good. You don't see a lot of kind of neighborhood casual bars with that kind of whiskey selection, which I think is... it's been doing good for us, you know. It's you can come in, wear whatever you want, and order anything from.
That's what I think that's important, the atmosphere. Because the other day someone said to me, said, oh, your place is great. It's like, it's a dive bar, but it has world class beers and whiskeys at Jimmy's number 43. I'm like, it's not a dive bar.
Right.
Like, it's
right.
got wood, it's comfortable.
It's way too clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that you're trying to, you know, be an approachable place.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we opened this, me and my brother and two friends, and we wanted to open a place that we want to hang out at, and you know, that's what we accomplished.
And then Gabby, you're with Kings County Distillery.
Yes.
And last time we did a show about spirits, a real one, was 2 years ago. We had Nicole Austin, who was your former distiller.
Yeah, she's now at Tullamore Dew. She's
opening
up that distillery there. Yeah. So she's doing really well, riding a lot of horses, so I'm hearing. But she's liking it a lot. But yeah, back to Norman's Kill, where Kings County is a huge fan. It's actually one of my neighborhood bars. So I tried the Four Roses single barrel the other day. It was great.
Great.
I just think that's a really cool thing with, I mean, a neighborhood bar with more than Jim and Jack, to be honest. You know, maybe Jim, Jack, maybe Johnny Red, and that's it. You know, it was more like a George Thorogood song than a damn bar. I mean, anymore, if you don't have at least 20 whiskeys, you know, you're behind the curve. I mean, I remember places, 5 years ago, they'd have, I don't know, 50 vodkas, and now it's whiskeys.
Most bars have a good whiskey selection now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed not to find a good bourbon at a bar around here.
Yep.
Give me your quick list, like, you know, 5 or 10 essential whiskeys that you would expect to see at a good bar or restaurant.
I would expect at least Johnny Walker Black. You got to have a single malt, so probably, geez, you know, you don't want to play favorites. But, I mean, I would like to see Glenmorangie Original. I'd like to see a something peaty. I mean, some kind of Isla. You got to have it. You got to have an Ardbeg. You got to have a Lagavulin. You got to have a Laphroaig. You got to have, you know, and then American whiskeys, I'm going to want to see something special, not just the usual stuff.
Great, man. Hey, we're off to a great start. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grain since 1978. One of the nice things about Bob's Red Mill is it's the only that I know of national supplier that's easily available for lots of interesting, hard-to-get grains and other seed products. So, you know, before Bob's Red Mill became widely available, you couldn't go get something like quinoa very easily, or you couldn't go get spelt easily in small quantities. But now you go to any one of the huge number of stores that carry Bob's Red Mill, and you can get smaller amounts of these really interesting, fun things to play with. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, I got Lou Bryson.
Howdy.
Hey, buddy. Howdy. All right. And I've been wanting to have you on for a long time, Lou. I think you might have called in one year
ago.
Yeah,
we called in one time. I think it was on with the people from Van Bergen to Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about, so, you know, you first started out as a writer. I know you wrote for Ale Street News.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, I wrote for Ale Street for a long time.
Tell us about your early days as a beer writer.
I mean, I was a librarian at the time, and just happened to work at a company. I worked at a pharmaceutical company, small pharmaceutical, bunch of chemists, and chemists are always into beer. That's just how it is. A bunch of home brewers. I mean, chemists are always home brewers or drinkers or whatever. And I had been doing some home brewing. I'd lived out in California, gone to Sierra Nevada, gone to San Francisco Brewing, gone to Anchor, and I just started kind of writing about beer just on email to these guys, and wound up, one of them knew a local beer store that wanted to do a newsletter, and he brought a copy of it in. He's like, you can do better than this crap. And I looked at him like, I do better than that crap. And that's how it all started. You know, it just kind of grew from there. Tony, I mean, my first assignment I got from Tony Forder for Ale Street was by mistake. He told me like 3 years later he meant to call somebody else, but he called me by accident. He'd got my contact information for the future. He says, I was too embarrassed to tell you, so I went ahead and assigned a story to you. Right? So, But yeah, I mean, it just kind of grew from there. And then when I went full time freelance,
born lucky, Lou Bryson, born
yeah,
lucky,
baby. You know, just set me in the table with the typewriter, and I'll go away. So, and then I mean, the getting into whiskey happened in '96, '97 when the craft brewing kind of flatlined there for a while, and you know, whiskey looked like there was an opening there because nobody was writing about whiskey. I mean, it was Michael Jackson, and that was about it. And there was an opening, so I started learning about whiskey. I mean, the first thing I did, I went to Kentucky and just started drinking bourbon in every direction. And then started picking up scotch, and then it was Irish. And then, I mean, actually just like 5 years ago, I finally got to Canada and checked some distilleries, and that was an eye-opener. I think that's a really overlooked area, Canadian whiskey, because we tend not to drink the good stuff here. We just drink the mixers. You know, it's like there's a whole world of scotch there, and we're drinking Johnny Walker Red.
In terms of making good whiskey the same as good beer, it's my understanding that in the west of Canada, they're making great grains and malts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For beer, so you think?
Well, that's what I mean. I think the center point of where malt is grown in North America is like 50 miles into Canada now because they're growing so much up there. Rye, I mean, all the good rye is being grown in Canada. Alberta is just, you know, covered in it. Alberta Distilling Limited in Calgary, they were founded in 1946 to provide a market for Alberta's rye farmers, and they make 100% rye whiskey. It's awesome stuff. And we get very little of it here except, well, Whistle Pig is actually mostly from Alberta Distillers Limited, which, I mean, should show you what kind of stuff they're turning out.
Well, I didn't know that. And Harold, taking one step back, for you, you know, a new bar opening up, I want to have 10 good whiskeys. What would you pick?
10 good whiskeys. I mean, you'd have to have, you know, Four Roses Single Barrel be up there. Belvigny Double Wood.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a Laphroaig 10 or an Ardbeg 10. Rittenhouse.
What do you do for Irish?
Irish. Tullamore Dew, Turkana.
You jump in, Gabby. I know you're like our secret spirits expert over there.
But I was going to say, he's got to have Kings County on
Kings
the bar.
That's not so secret. That's
What about Paul? John Paul Jones here is like, he's nodding away.
Well, I mean, like, you know, the Ardbeg 10 would have to pip the Lagavulin for me. Ardbeg's my favorite Isla whiskey.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. And back to beer. So our buddies on Untappd, what was the first beer from Cloudwater that we had?
Yeah, we had our one of our latest IPAs, the Mosaic Experimental 431 or HBC 431. Yeah, 6.5%, super juicy. A little bit of dankness coming through from the Mosaic there, but nice low bitterness, very, very crushable.
And you guys are up in Manchester, England.
That's correct, yeah.
Are there a lot of other breweries there?
I think it's... I think it's one of the best brewing regions in the UK, and not just because we're there.
Doesn't hurt, though, right?
Well, Thornbridge and Hawkshead and Marble are three breweries that have been doing business in that part of the UK for years. Joined more recently by the likes of Buxton, Magic Rock, Summer Wine, ourselves, and then the scene just blows up from there. So yeah, there's a lot going on up there, and I think as a region in England, where I don't know whether we're second to London or whether we're a little bit ahead of London, but we're trying to be ahead always.
And then the next beer, now we're on our second beer. We actually had another Greenpoint beer too, which I'll just give a shout out. It was Greenpoint Denali India Pale Ale. That was our. Now we're on our third beer.
Yeah, we have some Bergamot Sour. So it's a really low ABV, 3.5%. Really nice and drinkable.
Tastes like lime juice.
Yeah, kettle soured beer. We put a lot of rind and zest, I should say, from the bergamot lemons in this beer. So we kettle soured to get that sourness up in the first place, and we're just looking for something that's supremely drinkable. You know, really refreshing, that really showcases that fruit flavor, and that's about it.
Lou, when you tasted this beer, you didn't make any strange noises.
No, I'm just thinking. I mean, this is a deck beer for me. I mean, I
sure.
can, you know, yeah. out on the summer, yeah. I'd almost put ice in this.
Yeah,
get it really sure. cold. Yeah. Yeah, it's.
The
I
Mayor
get
Bloomberg
no problem with that.
Yeah, And for you at Norman's Kill, I mean, how do you pick your beers?
So,
or you don't pick them?
I pick them. I actually do the beers, and you know, it's a variation of stuff that I like that I've drank at like Barcade or other bars, and then and also, you know, representatives come in, they give me samples, they meet up with me, they tell me about new stuff coming in, seasonals and stuff like that. So
great. I'm gonna get what are some questions here. We don't need to ask questions, but so each one of you, I'm gonna ask you very briefly, answer a place you'd like to go, either a craft distiller or a craft brewery that you've either been to or haven't been to, but a place you like a lot that's producing either craft beer or craft distilled products.
I would go to a bar in Kyoto called Yoramu, and I would ask Yoram, an Israeli guy that's living out there that pours some of the best small batch Nihonshu in the world, which sake producer I should go and hang out with for a week, and I would just go and do that.
You're the real dude, man.
You know, it's funny you should say it, because I was thinking I just want to go to every damn distiller in Japan. I really do.
Well, we can take that trip sometime.
Yeah, yeah. Because as far as I'm concerned, those guys are freaking crazy nuts, and I don't care how big the distillery is, they're making craft whiskey.
It's precise, for sure.
Yeah.
Harold?
Probably anywhere in Scotland, so I could drink scotch and play golf, basically.
Do you think scotch is coming back? I mean, I feel like it's kind of neglected. Everyone talks about bourbon, but...
Yeah, I think I do think scotch has lost some of the steam, you know? They were off for a few years. They seem to be picking back up, but I'm not sure. I think a lot of the problem is that, I mean, people don't appreciate blends, and that's...
If it's a blend, they think it's not as good. And
yeah, and I think a lot of that is because American blends suck so much. I mean, I hate to be that blunt. No, I don't. Screw that. I will be that blunt. But the thing is, American blends aren't the same thing as Scottish blends. American blends are about 20% whiskey and about 80% neutral grain spirits. Scotch is not that. It's 100% whiskey. You know, it's all shit that's aged in the barrel for at least 3 years. It's good. And I mean, I drink a lot of blends. I drink a lot of blends. I drink a lot of blended malts. Monkey Shoulder. Just, you know, I mean, that's my go-to.
The Monkey Shoulder is good.
Yeah, that's my BYO whiskey. When I go out, I take a bottle of Monkey Shoulder with me.
And I think a lot of people assume that scotch is smoky.
Yeah,
which
not so at all.
So, I mean, yeah, of course, there's a lot of smoky scotches. But
yeah, but I like to get a bottle of Glendronic and just hit him over the head with it.
Yeah, I mean, right? You know, something like Highland Park's a great whiskey to tune people
Hell yeah,
into.
About
to,
halfway.
Yeah, like right. Really drinkable, yep. Like floral. Yeah.
Yep.
And Gabby, where should we go this weekend?
Oh, well, you know, I was actually up at Hill Rock Distillery upstate. It was great. I learned a little bit about the Solera bourbon aging, so that was interesting to see for sure. But a little bit about, you know, the scotch and bourbon mix. We make a peated bourbon, so that's kind of mm-hmm. how I've been getting into, you know, trying some more scotches, getting used to that peat and smokiness there as well.
Yeah, actually, your ears should have been burning a little bit earlier, because I was saying really nice things about your peated bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have some more for you to taste. That's if you're interested.
And that's on our tasting tonight at Jimmy's Number 4.
Yeah,
nice.
You can pop. Why don't you pop one of the whiskeys too? We can talk
sure.
about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And BR for you with all, you know, all the different breweries.
I was hoping you were going to skip by me because that is such a tough question. I mean, I got to say, you know, like Lou, I'm a fan of lagers. And sitting, whether it's Augustiner Keller or yeah. you know somewhere in Bamberg at an outdoor beer garden in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, you bring in some really nice stuff from down there.
You know,
there.
And those breweries yeah. are just these fantastic small places that look like, I mean, they are out of, you know, the mid-century with fantastic tiling, the open fermenters, the yeast. But I mean, I've seen that, but I want to go back. But there's other, I mean, I haven't been to our British breweries.
No.
I want to
go
there.
Back.
And
go back.
And there's just too many places.
I guess where I want to go. My favorite place in Route 84, Connecticut, Oxbow, Connecticut, OEC, the Order of Eccentric, you know, Cooks. Have you been up there yet? It's owned by the son of the Be United importer. So
I'd love to check that out.
Yeah, that's my plug. All right, so let's keep going. So we're tasting your second beer. Tastes like lime juice. You know, when you're picking beers, how do you? I'm just, you know, Sorry. When you're picking beers, how do you decide to make a style of beer? Because you guys are kind of new, you're in England. Are you mostly trying to export too? You're selling mostly?
No. Only like half a percent of what we've made has ever left the country. We can't fulfill demand in the UK, so exports really what we do when we know we're out here for an event. But I mean, you know, how we pick the styles of beer that we produce. A lot of it comes down to sometimes a group discussion in the brewery. Sometimes it comes down to an individual's experience somewhere. Sometimes my experience somewhere. And a lot of it is to do with the ingredients that we use. What's fresh and in season right now. We don't make the same beer twice. I mean, it's very rare that we make the same beer again. So we just keep turning through new recipes and variations on a theme.
You've only been in business, what, a year and a half or so?
2 years, yeah.
But you've traveled, you know these places in Japan. How many years have you been traveling and checking out all these cool places in the world?
I don't know, maybe 12 years.
Yeah, so what were you doing before this?
My background's pretty mixed. I was working in food and drink for a while before, running a very small cafe in the city in Manchester. I have a training in music technology and audio mastering. But my wife's traveled a lot for her work, and we like to spend our time traveling when we can. Most of that happens today around where beer events are happening. Almost all of my travel today is to go and collaborate with someone or hang out or attend the Craperies conference, which is what I'm in the East Coast for right now.
And how many collaborations have you done since you've been in the States, or will be doing?
On this trip, we'll be doing four. So we worked with Other Half and Trillium and The Veil last week. Trillium and The Veil, another half. We all brewed up in Boston. We brewed with Other Half right when we started our trip. We're going to head down the coast to Philadelphia and then jump up to Sea Forest in Maine in Ambler. And then we're going to head further down and brew with The Veil in Richmond, Virginia before we head to the Craft Brewers Conference. And then hopefully things will steady out a little bit.
Sounds like fun, doesn't it, Lou?
Oh, my God, yes.
And Lou, for you, for things like Craft Brewers Conference, I mean, are those events that you go to, do you speak at them? You know, what are some...
No,
things of interest.
I don't want to hear what I'm saying.
Nobody wants to hear you.
No, I don't want to hear it. No, I just, I mean, I want to go and I want to, I want to hear what other people are saying when they go to Craft Brewers Conference.
Good.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. Mike's back on.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. I really go to those things to hear what other people have to say, and then I go and tell other people what they said, and, you know, I'm kind of like that, the thing in Occupy with the where everybody would stand up and repeat what everybody else said. That's all I'm doing. So
that's you have great analogies, man.
Well, you know, it's like I tell people, it's what I do. I ought to be good at it. So,
so we had some beer now, Gabby. Which whiskey are you pouring?
I'm pouring out the peated bourbon right now. So that's 70% corn and a mix of 15% malted barley, 15% peated malt.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Glad to hear it. Yeah. Thank you.
And I want to hear Lou's response. He likes it.
He's putting, he's putting that British IPA face.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just a lot to like about that.
We'll take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, a big shout out. Lou Howdy's here from Lou Howdy Bryson. Hey, Lou.
Howdy.
Hey, if you're a member of Heritage Radio Network, and if you're not, join up fast because next week, Wednesday, April 12th, you can do a members-only event. One of our business members, Threes Brewery, has an outpost in Williamsburg, and our one of our top hosts, Kathy Irway, host of Eat Your Words. We'll be giving a little talk and hang out and books and brews. So check it out. Join heritageradionetwork.org and a lot of member benefits. So, you guys, this is kind of cool. It's like I'm in like this in-between world. You know, you got beer and whiskeys. And I really want to hear more about Norman Kills because I do love good pubs. And I think that if I had to go somewhere in New York where I felt comfortable and I could try a lot of whiskeys, I would go to Norman Kills.
I want to hear more about this grilled cheese thing.
The grilled cheeses are amazing.
So we have seven grilled cheeses, and that's the only thing we do. We serve them with a pickle spear, and that's the only food we do.
Nice.
And it's just a sandwich press behind the bar. It's a very simple operation. Yeah, yeah. But
I love a great small menu. It's
yeah.
It's the best.
And yeah, we have 400. We're just under 400 whiskeys right now, but it always fluctuates because there's new stuff coming in, stuff coming out. So we stay current with you know, what comes out. And then eventually we need to make decisions and we need to let stuff go. Basically.
So are you focused on particular types of whiskey or you try to cover the...
I would say 50% of our whiskey sales are probably American, you know, bourbon or rye. But just staying current. You know, there's new scotches coming out all the time. There's new whiskeys coming. And then the fall is a big whiskey season with all the limited releases. And luckily, we're on those allocation lists, so we get the nice bottles, and then, and then our prices are good because we're not in Manhattan. So,
what's the typical price point that people buy whiskey at?
Probably, you know, $9 to $13 is probably the hot zone.
What do you guys think of a good pub? And I like beer, I like cider, I like whiskey. You know, I think Norman Kills is a good pub to me. Why don't you guys weigh in on what you think a good pub is? And
well, I think a good pub makes an entire group of people, a group of friends, feel like they're all being looked after. So I think a good pub has phenomenally fresh beer poured through beautifully clean lines from a great cool cellar, but it also might have a short, good wine list and a great spirit selection. And anyone can walk in there with their family, their friends, get settled and hang out for the evening. That, for me, is a good pub. Like, that's what makes it a no-brainer. If I walk into a beer bar and I'm well-served, but my friend that doesn't necessarily geek out as about beer as much as me feels like they're getting shortchanged, we're going to head out at some point. So I think that rounded offering is where it's at.
Yeah, I think too many places focus on the on the pint and not on the people. I really think that, and good beer is great, but beer is more about, well, I think beer is a lot of it is about who you're drinking it with. And like I said, like you said, sorry. I mean, if people don't feel comfortable there, it's not going to cut it.
I like drinking with you guys. Okay, then there's some more things about whiskey.
So. Yeah, radio studios are really pretty good pubs.
This is the best one. So I'm drinking your next beer? What is it, a double IPA?
Yeah, so this is our last version of our double IPA. We started about 18 months ago making versions of double IPA, going through lots of different production techniques, ingredient combinations, really looking to experiment a lot and importantly bring our consumers along with that experimentation. So the point of releasing a different version of our double IPA was that it was really obvious that we'd moved on and done something different.
You know, this one tastes like the most to me like a double IPA. I mean, that sounds obvious, but I love it, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the aroma is just phenomenal.
But style-wise, you
saw his face. Yeah, it was pretty
good. Doesn't it kind of pop? Like, wow, this is double IPA.
Yeah.
This is what?
Yeah.
Not too bitter.
And yet, exactly. It's not like clenching me up in the back with the bitterness.
It's all of that juicy impact that you got a lot of hops on the aroma. And now, you know, in the palate, you're getting a lot of juicy flavors. You're getting quite a short finish, and it would be nice if it was longer, and bitterness is definitely a great finish extender, but it's nice to just have that kind of nice juicy
finish. The variation is nice. Yeah, you know, thank you everything so doesn't have to linger forever.
Sure. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And Harold, so we're in our good pub. So I just had this nice double IPA and I'm drinking the peated whiskey from Kings County. What's the proper way to serve that, especially in context of drinking it with a beer?
I mean, I would say the best way to serve a whiskey is however the customer wants it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, like there's a lot of people.
Cheers, David.
And here's the thing. There are whiskeys that I like neat. There are whiskeys that I like with a little bit of water or
yes.
an ice cube or even with club soda. And I limit it at club soda, though.
You know, some of them are, that's what they're designed for. That's what they're built to do. You know, I mean, some whiskeys to drink them neat is simply the wrong way because that's not how they were made.
And what about you, Gabby, in the tasting room at Kings County Distillery?
Right. I mean, we always say exactly what Harold says. It's however you want to drink a whiskey is the way it should go.
But how do you learn? Like this? So, I mean, when you were talking about, say it again, how you like to serve them, Harold, the three different ways. He said
neat, with water or with ice.
And then Lou started rubbing his hands and then jumping around.
He got excited.
I just, you know, it's there's too much. Well, I can't remember who it is. I think I said it to somebody when I was out in Minneapolis at the thing. I don't want to, you know, when I talk about whiskey to people, I don't want to be prescriptive and tell them this is how you need to drink it and this is what you should be tasting and this is why you should be. Bullshit. I want to be descriptive. When I'm like,
so with this Kings County, the peated whiskey, peated bourbon, what would be your preferred way right now?
I mean, this.
We're drinking it neat.
Neat or maybe one cube. Because I really want to get the whole smack of it, yeah.
And then what about ice cubes? So this is a good question for you know for pub owners and things. You know, a friend of ours, Gloria Dawson, wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal about ice cubes. And so at my place, we've made a point of you know getting our own silicone molds and making these big ice cubes that you put in a glass and then you put the whiskey on top.
I mean, I hate to sound like a geek, but this is one of the things I will geek on. I think the wrong ice can ruin it. You know, you need to have cold ice. If your ice is done, and you know, people are like, "Oh, ice is cold." Yeah, but I mean, it's ice at 30 degrees Fahrenheit. It's also ice at 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and the ice at 20 degrees Fahrenheit is better.
So you like cold ice?
I like a cold ice.
So you don't
ice.
Want it already melting and sweating?
No, I'll work on that my own. Right. But
I think it's largely the same with beer dispense. I mean, if you give someone a pour of beer at literally the most perfect serving temperature, then it's just downhill from there.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it's only that way for 5 minutes.
Yeah, really to cut it back a little bit and allow the customer to choose. You know how long they sit with that. With it's the same thing that you're talking about there. With
it's like cask strength whiskey. Cask strength whiskey. You can cut it to where you want it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's already done it. This is what I always tell the people, like, oh, you must drink it neat. Like, buddy, unless it's cask strength, someone's already put water in it. You know,
yeah,
so you're not, right? You know, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just doing what the guys at the distillery did.
And how do they do that? I mean, it's a little myths of whiskey, but I always just think, oh, the whiskey is distilled and it's aged and it comes out. So it's not the case.
I mean, it comes off the still at one proof. It goes in the barrel at another proof. It comes out of the barrel at another proof. And again, unless it's being bottled at barrel strength, cask strength, it gets proofed, which is, you know, a nice word for saying we put water in it, to yet another proof. So
I think the mystical process is that they really feel a lot of confidence and conviction the same way that that you can feel confidence and conviction when you're serving whiskey to offer it up as the customer wants. I mean, that's, you know, that in itself is carrying on that distiller's conviction that the right way to serve the whiskey is.
I mean, they've made a decision.
Yeah, person by person,
yeah.
For sure.
Right. Yeah. I could agree with that. Choosing the proof of whiskey is almost like an art in itself. A proof by just off by one could be completely different than another. So there's a lot that goes into that as well.
Well, that's what I mean. Wild Turkey is the one I always turn to in that Jimmy Russell insists that 101 is the place it's got to be. Not 100, not 102, not 105, not 92, 101. And that's where it tastes the best. And the thing is, I mean, you don't like that, put a little water in it. Drop a cube of ice in it and okay, you know, put some club soda in it. I mean, whatever, just drink it.
It should be the goal that it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Tattoo that on my butt. Come on.
So you can put ice in your lime. What was the second beer we had?
The bergamot sour. Yeah, the
bergamot sour.
Well, I mean, that's really good with gin.
See?
Oh, yeah. You get a big pour of that measure of gin, a little bit more of that fresh bergamot lemon, and you're set.
And then for cocktails, that's something totally different. I don't even want to talk about cocktails, but I like the idea of having, like, my whiskey with my beer.
See, that's my favorite cocktail.
Same beer. Yeah. That's usually how I drink beer and whiskey.
But you can say you could put gin in your sour
beer. Bergamot sour, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good move.
What about for you, BR? You know, you're one of my tasting expert buddies.
What, in terms of cocktails or how I drink my whiskey and bourbon?
Yeah.
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 No, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say I do agree. I find for bourbons and whiskeys, you know, I like to try them neat first just to get an idea of what they are. Yes. And then, yeah, sometimes it's I want a little water, a little ice. And there are times where I'll drink the same one, depending on how I feel, with just a splash of water or an ice cube. Say, oh, no, today I want this.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of cocktails with beer as well. I think would be fantastic. As you say, the bergamot with a gin. I could just see that going really, really well. I don't think there's anything, you know, some people are like, oh, you shouldn't adulterate the beer. The beer is how it's supposed to be. But I think it's the person drinking it is how they want to have it. Even I've gone so far as mixing Ballantine with Orangina or Ballangina, which is quite refreshing on a hot summer day.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to work with the assumption that the producer wants you to have a good time. And so however that manifests for you at that point in time is cool.
That's what I love. I have so many Scotch distillers I know that have said exactly the same thing. We make it to drink. Just drink it.
Yeah.
However you want to drink it.
And Gabby's like ready to say something, I can tell.
No, I'm just listening. I'm enjoying everybody. Yeah.
You like
great.
It. And if I come in, so like one other thing about whiskey drinking, I feel like in beer now people are more experimental. They're willing to try different brands. Do you feel like when you're drinking whiskey that people kind of stick with one brand?
I think that's what's fun about beer and whiskey is there's just so much good stuff out there that you can, and those are the best customers. They come in, they ask questions, and they start with something, and then they move on to something else, and then whether they stay within the same category of whiskey or they go from bourbon to scotch or anything, you know. And
that's starting to break up now, just like it did with beer. I mean, beer, you know, 20 years ago, I'm a this drinker, I'm a that drinker, I'm a...
Sure.
It's all gone.
Yeah, I feel like
it's just blown up, and whiskey's going the same way.
Yeah, I mean, now it's totally acceptable to just, profess an allegiance to nice beer.
Right, right. I like
beer. And that's totally, totally vague and woolly, but it also makes complete sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I want more of the Cloudwater Double IPA, please.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, I think I have a couple Jones. More, actually.
So coming after the show, it's funny because we ran into the guy, John from Arizona, Wilderness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you guys had been hanging out at some point.
Yeah,
Justin was down there with Steal This Beer in Miami. So it's great to have all these people, the world that you guys mixing together. One more thing. You're up at Trillium with The Veil and Other Half.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because you were going back to this hazy New England style of IPA. You know, what is it about that, and what is it about Trillium?
Trillium blow me away, for sure. They make absolutely exquisite beers. They make beer that makes people lose British IPA face. I'm going to... that's it from... Yeah, so they make beer that just puts a smile on my face, like, time and time again. And they're not alone in doing that, but really, every time I've drank their beer, I've been like, wow, this is amazing. And... it's just about that sensory experience. And, you know, I say that like I don't have that bias with my eyes. So my eyes don't get to win this experience because this is a flavor experience and it's an aroma experience. And that's what wins. It's delightful. The amount of flavor that they manage to lock in to their beers just blows me away. So getting to go up there, the Other Half and The Veil were deep in on this collaboration with those guys, and just the fact that I was over here, Other Half kindly hooked me up with the chance to head up there and hang out with those guys too. It's so inspiring to see a company that's 4 years in as Trillium are, and tackling as much as they are, I mean, they're putting out phenomenal beers. They're growing, but their growth is not jeopardizing the quality of their beer at all. In fact, it, you know, maybe in their eyes, it's improving it as they dial everything in even more. But you know, it's as a British brewer, inspired by all those great experiences that I possibly can have, coming here, especially coming to the East Coast, is like, it's like going into the future. And
it's so sweet to hear you say that about the East Coast.
Well, yeah, it's I mean, we've got great friends on both coasts, and there are a lot of people pushing super hard. You know, Henry at Monkish, you know, Tim over at Cellarmaker, you know, Andrew down at Modern Times in San Diego. You know, all those brewers are pushing really, really hard on the West Coast too, and that's only the half of it,
right?
Yeah, I mean, really, like, coming here full stop is you know, it's like a journey into the future, and it's wonderful.
We're gonna wrap up, Lou. Want to say anything else about, like, our tasting tonight? You know, I know you picked a number of the bourbons and.
Yeah, I think we, with some pork, I mean, and biscuits. I, to be honest, I'm actually really excited about the whole biscuit idea. I think this is a, I mean, it's almost like, it's American regionalism, you know, the melting pot wasn't enough. Now we're going to take it and we're actually melting the pot itself and making all of America everywhere. I love having the idea of Southern biscuits and Southern bourbon in New York with New York biscuits and New York bourbon.
That's great. And Tasting Whiskey, it's a great book.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thanks for coming up to the show, and we're going to have Jimmy's number 43 in a few minutes. And you guys, Harold, you going to come with us?
I will. I'll stop by.
And anything else? What's your favorite whiskey right now? And that's a broad question, but you're going to go to your place, like, tonight. You feel like drinking.
It's kind of like going to what we were saying earlier. It's kind of like saying, like, what's your favorite song or what's your favorite? You know, it really depends on how you feel.
I mean, right now it's the peated bourbon from Kings County.
Right now, yeah, you're right.
That's in my mouth. And I like this Cloudwater Double IPA. And Gabby, you know, anything else you want to say about Kings County Distillery?
No, it's definitely worth a visit. I think being in New York really enables whiskey lovers and, you know, craft lovers to come over and check out the distillery. So I definitely recommend it if you haven't been.
And I just want to thank, first of all, Heritage Radio Network for having us. But, you know, Roberta's is a great place. They do support Heritage Radio Network, too. And just coming here and seeing, oh, guys from Arizona Wilderness showing up, and Lou Bryson found his way on the subway on the L train, you know, from Penn Station. And, you know, BR, you know, bringing in your English, you know, Cloudwater guys. This is a special place, and they're really good to us. And just want to give everybody a shout-out for that. And coming up of note, buddies. Coming up of note, our event, Brisket King of NYC, is April 19th. It's a pretty special event. We've got some experts from Texas up, Daniel Vaughn from Texas Monthly, and Aaron Franklin is going to be one of our judges. So check it out, brisketkingnyc.com. So, guys, I hate to say goodbye. We're just getting to know each other and talk, but we'll be back next week. And a big thanks to Lou, Harold, Paul, and Gabby, and BR for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, our intern, Hillary Fausen, and our engineer, David Tadashore. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Yeah,
baby.
Thanks for having me.
Baby.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.